What to Watch For every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
There's no open for the show built into it today, so I'm singing one for you guys.
Thank you so much.
Danny and Gallant.
That's correct. Let's get this thing going. We heard Pete Carroll talking about Marshawn Lynch, and he's got a couple weeks under his belt. I love the fact that Marshawn Lynch is on this team. I think that he brings an emotional boost. I think he's really effective in short yardage situations. I like the fight. He's still feisty. The team is going to respond to him. If they start grooming him or preparing him or hoping that he's going to be ready to take a more prominent role or be a lead back for this team and resurrect feelings of what it was once like with him, I think they're making a huge mistake. He is, it's not a, he's not a figurehead. It's not a symbol. It's not just some sort of, but he is not. They can't expect nor ask him to take that role. And quite frankly, I don't think they should, because their best bet against the Packers is going to be throwing the ball.
Look at you being Paul Gallant to open up the show, scratching your head. Wow, we're going to use Marshawn Lynch a whole lot. But you are right. What was your first thought when you heard that Pete was saying we're probably going to use a lot more Marshawn this week?
My first thought was, I think that is catering to the public perception, and fans love having Marshawn back, and that's going to continue. That's a component of this. Marshawn brings an emotional boost, not just within the locker room, but to the fans, and that this is kind of, hey, how do you get the most out of Marshawn? You make him feel like, hey, we're going to turn to you more, and you get more people behind him. And the more I thought about it, the more I think that Pete is being actually straight up 100% truthful about it, that he does want to see Marshawn Lynch take a bigger role. And if that's the case, I do think that's a mistake.
And he's just a couple weeks under his belt, and he made it through clean. He feels fine physically. So he's just more available to us for more opportunities. That's all.
I heard that, and I thought to myself, it just doesn't seem like he's actually saying what the Seahawks are doing, because I just have a hard time buying into the fact, just like you, Danny, that they are going to give Marshawn more looks. That said, I'm not that opposed to it, because teams have run the ball pretty well against the Packers this season, and I think you got to make it an unpredictable kind of game specifically for the Packers' best defensive player. This is Za'Darius Smith. I went back, I watched the Monday night football game between the Packers and Vikings in Minnesota, and Za'Darius Smith was an absolute monster. He is like a more stout Jadeveon Clowney, and specifically the Clowney that I remember vividly from when I was covering the Texans in Houston. They move him all over the place. He is really good in pass rushing, but he is also, I think, very good at just being disruptive. And I think you want to make it so that you can't really have a specific game plan with that guy. And I hate to say this about Travis Homer, but I think that the way to attack this Packers defense is by being powerful with your ground attack. And I think Travis Homer can be powerful, but I don't think he can do it over the course of an entire game. So I don't think they're going to go into this one, Danny, and give Marshawn something like they were giving him when it was 2014, 2015, back in the day. But I do like the element of giving Marshawn a good 10, 11 carries or so in this game, because I think that he can provide a wallop that I don't think Travis Homer quite can.
Now, the number of carries that he gets, I think that could happen, because that's the style of game that Pete wants to play. I feel that Seattle's going to need to score to keep up with Green Bay in this game. And my worry, I don't see a scenario where Marshawn goes off and has 125 yards rushing. I was on a Green Bay radio station this morning, and they were asking me that, and you hear and talk to people. I saw Michael Sean Duggar response of who's the best non-quarterback that's in this playoffs, and it's Marshawn Lynch. There's definitely a perception out there of a player who is the memories of what he was. The memories of what he was are so strong, and I like the fact that he's here. I think you get into trouble, especially when you bring back a player who used to be a superstar, when you start teasing yourself with the idea that he might be able to stir the echoes and wake things up again. And when I heard Pete say that, and I saw the headline in the Seattle Times on Tuesday, which was, here are six ways to fix the rushing offense, and it started with getting Marshawn Lynch more involved, I don't think that's the way to fix the run offense. I think that Marshawn has to be used in certain situations. I don't think he has the burst to reel off 40, 50, 30-yard runs. He was faster than people gave him credit for. And I do actually think that Travis Homer, if you're going to have a 100-yard rusher in this game, I think the odds of it, the likelihood of it being Travis Homer is significantly higher than it being Marshawn.
I don't think it's really likely for either of them. I think it's going to be one of those running back by committee things. It is interesting, the power of memory. And remember obviously fantastic movie, Cats. There's a song called Memory, and at the very end of that song, Memories, says, look, a new day has begun. The new day has begun with Marshawn Lynch. He's not that guy anymore. He's never going to be that guy again. I think that is very interesting that outside of Seattle, and maybe even here, that memory, that emotional attachment to what Marshawn Lynch was, has making people think that he can be that guy again. It's just asking way too much of somebody who hasn't been playing for an entire year. It's not as easy as just getting back up on a bicycle, getting a workload akin to what he was 5 years ago.
Paul, we've worked together for a little bit now. I consider us friends. We're close. I like you a great deal. So I say this in a feeling of utmost camaraderie and respect. Don't ever mention Cats on this program again.
The movie or the musical?
Either.
Can he mention his own cat?
He can mention his own cat. I do not ever want to hear
You're so not Jellicle right now. It's ridiculous.
In any way, I do not want it referenced. I don't want songs brought up from it. Like, you can do all the other stuff. Cats will not ever be invoked on this
program
again.
You're just a McCavity right now. It's ridiculous.
Okay, we're now moving on. It's Danny and Gallant. Dominique Foxworth was asked to make a bold prediction. And he did exactly that with Mina Kimes. And I'm having a hard time telling how much I should take him at his word. But I've actually followed Foxworth quite a bit. He's a very smart guy, former president of the NFLPA, in addition to being a player. He doesn't see the Seahawks having much of a chance.
Seahawks Twitter, if you're listening, I want you to pause right now, at Cable Thanos. Dominique, say something like haterific.
All right.
That will be perfect for video if Seattle beats Green Bay.
There's no chance. The Seahawks have no chance to beat Green Bay in Lambeau this weekend. There is no chance.
Okay. Didn't really give any juice behind it, though. I mean, Mina just goaded him into it, right?
she did kind of poke and prod him. There is a sense, and it's puzzling to me, because if you were going to poke a lot of holes in the Seahawks, you could do that. You can poke a hole in their resume. It's really hard to do that against the Green Bay Packers, whose resume is as much, maybe not more flawed, but it's certainly as flawed as Seattle's is.
It's the poke hole bowl. It's a game that neither of these teams are really convincing. They just have to prove that they're something more than they are. And basically, this game that we're going to see between them on Sunday at Lambeau Field is going to show us what the Green Bay Packers are and what the Seattle Seahawks are. The Packers haven't played anyone this year. I really can't get past this, and I can't emphasize it enough. They played the 49ers. They got trounced. That is it. That is all we have to go off of. It could be a one-time thing, but that is the one-time thing. That was their one shot, their moment. Their mom's spaghetti is all over their sweater, and guess what? They need another opportunity right now. How are they going to fare? I have no idea. No one has any idea. Much like with the Seahawks team, they are a different team than the team that I think was being competitive with all of those really tough teams that they played earlier in the year. The last fourth of the season, they lost three of their last four. It is a team that, yes, played well against the Packers, but it was a team that also took an entire half to even show up against the San Francisco 49ers, and that is a little concerning for me as well. So both of these teams have a lot to prove. I do think that there is a blueprint that the Seahawks could potentially take, and I think offensively it's going to involve going to balance. I think that they're going to need to run the football a little bit. I think that they're going to need to run it to make sure that they can keep a guy like Za'Darius Smith honest and to make sure that Russell Wilson is not being chased down by that guy all game long.
How many points do they score with that approach? We saw Derrick Henry basically run over the Patriots, and that approach produced 14 points.
Mm-hmm. Isn't this one of those games where you want to make it as quick as possible?
You want to bleed the clock and eliminate the number of times that Rodgers gets the ball. That does precipitate that you need to stop him a couple times. It comes back to that for me. How many points are they going to need to score to win this game?
I think
they're
going
to need to
many.
Be in high 20s, really. That's interesting. Have you seen the weather forecast? They're calling for like a foot of snow possibly this weekend. Or maybe the guys in Green Bay were just trying to scare me. I also tried to, this morning when I went on with them, I tried to, with a straight face, talk about Golden Tate's catch. If you actually watch and slow it down, Golden Tate has possession of the ball first. It's just with one hand, but he actually controls it first. So when it became simultaneous possession, it should have reverted to him.
How do they handle that?
It was incredulous. They didn't really play along all that well. And I ended up having to kind of let them know that I was kidding about that. I don't think it's the worst call I've ever seen, but I certainly, all things being equal, I did not necessarily think Golden Tate caught it.
Tie goes to the receiver. Doesn't matter.
Packer fans are so easy to goad and to poke. It is Danny and Gallant. We got a lot of fun guests. James Jones, who is a former Packer who was on the field in that game, in the Fail Mary game, is going to join us. We also have Steve Weish of the NFL Network, and right now we'll tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10, brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
First thing to watch for is Dwayne Brown. He did not practice yesterday, but Pete Carroll kind of being coy and saying that it hasn't been ruled out whether or not he'll have a chance to play this week.
Dwayne did some work yesterday and doing work again today, so he won't practice today, but it's an encouraging sign about him, you know, making his return, and so we'll see what happens. We won't know till late.
Parse that. How are you feeling about either of those two?
I don't think he's playing. I don't think we're going to see either one of those guys. I think Upati, it sounds like he's getting more tests done on a stinger that hasn't subsided, and that's all you can do is wait for that to calm down. I don't think we'll see Dwayne Brown play, but I think he's going to give it everything he can to try and make it there. But he hasn't practiced yet, and it's knee surgery. I don't think so.
Also, a little alarming from yesterday's practice, you also had George Fant not practicing with a groin injury. You also had Joey Hunt not practicing with, I think, an ankle injury, too. So four of the offensive linemen that I think you would like to have out there for the Seahawks dealing with something a little concerning, especially, again, when you're going up against someone like Za'Darius Smith.
What to watch for?
I never know what to make of any stories that involve our Cougs and Mike Leach and flirting with other teams, but he reportedly interviewed for the Mississippi State head coach job. Jess, what's going on here?
I would say just note where it took place, which is Key West, which is where he went immediately following the Cheez-It Bowl. And, you know, that's where Bill Moose went to find him and to get him there. But it's not like Coach went anywhere. You can just go to Key West and he's not going to turn you away. I think he's been coveted by a lot of teams. I'm not going to say that it's an impossibility, but the location of the meeting says a lot to me.
I also think that Mike Leach will talk to anybody who has a job. I think that anybody who has a job opening, he will offer and use that as an opportunity to maybe get a little more concessions, which, look, every coach has that priority or prerogative. Sounds like Sark's going to get that job, which is very interesting to me. But yeah, I think that Mike Leach, and if he were to take that, I'd be interested to see how he'd do in the SEC, but I don't see him getting a better setup than he's got in Pullman.
That's a really hard place. It's obviously a hard place to win as well, Pullman, in the Pac-12, but if you're talking about in the SEC West, you are the program with the absolute least amount of resources in the best division de facto in college football. I wouldn't really want to take that. If I were in his shoes.
Let here KJ Wright hear you talk about his alma mater in that way.
But isn't that the reality? I mean, that is a tough, tough division to play in. You're going up against Alabama and LSU at the top. Auburn and Texas A&M have a lot of resources as well. And then after that, I mean, none of those programs, Ole Miss, Arkansas, it's not like any of them don't try and don't have crazy alums that are dumping tons of money into the program. They're at the bottom of that, unfortunately.
What to watch for.
UW Hoops back on the hardwood tonight. Men taking on Stanford, 6 p.m. That game is going to be on FS1. Cardinal tend to be a pretty tough matchup for the Huskies, though the Huskies did sweep them last season. I'm interested to see if Washington can carry forward. It seemed like they played their best overall game of the year against USC. I'll be interested to see if they pick up where they left off.
They were awesome in that game, and it's a nice bounce back, especially from what we had seen from them against UCLA, where, you know, you've got Jaden McDaniels doing questionable things, and you also have some random guy that no one's ever heard of dropping six threes on you. those things can happen when you have that 2-3. I'm curious to see what they do, but I feel like it'll be closer to what we saw against USC. I feel like this team has so much talent. It's about time that we see them put it all together, especially as they get some rapport with one another.
That is what to watch for. Now it's time for our morning drive. The professor en route, still Hall of Fame voting duty. So we got Jake Heaps is stepping in for the morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Morning, Jake. Welcome to Danny and Gallant. How you doing, buddy?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
We are doing well. We are wondering if Dwayne Brown is going to be on the field for the Seattle Seahawks on Sunday. You were very optimistic about Brown's status because you compared it to an injury that DK Metcalf had to have a routine cleanup on, I believe, earlier this year. Do you feel any better, any worse about Dwayne Brown and the potential for him to play after hearing what Pete had to say yesterday?
Yeah, I see no reason for my initial prognostication to change about Dwayne Brown. Honestly, I think that it's exactly what you would hope that they would say about Dwayne Brown at this point. I mean, the fact that they're even talking about him being a part of the injury report or having a chance to play is huge. And with Dwayne Brown being a pro in every aspect, a guy who understands what it takes in this league to get his body right and to where it needs to be to play, I think that that is a huge aspect of it. And also the fact that Dwayne Brown, you got to remember, Dwayne hasn't had a long career of playing deep into the playoffs as well with the Houston Texans. So he wants to be out there for his teammates just as bad as anybody. And not only that, but from a competitive standpoint, it's a great challenge to go against Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith and to protect Russell Wilson. So I think there's a lot of motivation for Dwayne Brown to get back into this game. So I still stand by what I said earlier in the week, and I think that there's a great chance that Dwayne Brown comes back and plays.
Jake, you're a pretty nice guy. In fact, I think you're a nice enough guy. Are you so nice?
Really nice guy.
You won't rub my nose in the fact that I was really, really wrong about DK Metcalf this season?
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far, Danny. I think I like to revel in that just a little bit because I think it was on the morning show that we did a show together where we talked about DK Metcalf.
But what did I say? Something like he was going to catch 20 passes?
Yeah, 20 passes, maybe. I think it was the wording that you used.
That's what it was.
But, hey, it's all good. It's all good. Look, Brock Huard and I chest bumped for Ziggy Ansah. So, I mean, like, look, we have our highs and our lows here. So, it's all good. When I looked at DK Metcalf, right away at rookie minicamp, there are certain things as a quarterback that you see, the way that he catches the football, the way that he runs. It wasn't that DK was perfect, but you knew just by the way that he was working and the conversations that everyone was having around him and just with what I saw with my own eyes, that he was going to have a major impact. And so from the beginning, I thought that he was going to be, you know, a 40 catch guy, around 600 yards. And I think I said 5 touchdowns. So, you know, he exceeded my own expectations. And I think one of the biggest aspects of it all is the fact that DK was just an extremely hard worker, and the relationship that he struck with Russell Wilson and the relationship that they've developed has been massive for DK and his development and ultimately for this football team.
When I look at the Packers, I feel strange just looking at what Aaron Rodgers has possibly become, and maybe I'm making Jake too much out of his game against the Minnesota Vikings where he was just misfiring, and I think he threw 28 incompletions over the course of it. How do you feel about Aaron Rodgers in terms of what his overall skill set is? Has it diminished? Has he changed as a quarterback?
Yeah, Paul, it's a great question, man, because I'm going to answer this in a two-parter because – For Aaron Rodgers, the last, honestly, 2-3 years, he has not been the same elite player in terms of production, in terms of what you are accustomed to seeing Aaron Rodgers do. And you've seen a lot of overthrows, a lot of inaccuracy at times with Aaron Rodgers. And so, Paul, it wasn't even just an isolated incident. This has been a ongoing thing for him over the last couple seasons. So from that standpoint, yes. The difference, though, is Aaron Rodgers is not over the hill. And what I mean by that is physically, he still is capable of doing all the things that he's ever done. He's not Tom Brady. He's not Drew Brees, Philip Rivers, where they are losing their skills physically and are able to overcome it because they're one of the greats and mentally they can get through it. Aaron Rodgers still has the ability to extend plays. He still has the ability to make ridiculous throws. And so you're still nervous about going and facing Aaron Rodgers, but at the same time, you have a little confidence knowing that this offense for the Green Bay Packers this year has not been great. And also that Aaron Rodgers has not necessarily performed up to his normal standard for the majority of the year. He's had a couple games where he's, you know, popped off and played at the elite level that he's capable of. But for the majority of the year, people are questioning Aaron Rodgers and his future of being one of the true elite best quarterbacks in the league.
I thought you were going to say a couple games where he popped off, made a crack about God being a Packers fan, and overall been a snide, condescending jerk after the game. But you were talking about his performance on the field. I love the fact that there's a little bit of friction or tension. Even if neither guy, neither Aaron Rodgers nor Russell Wilson will come out and say it, I love the fact that there's a little bit of tension between the two of them.
Absolutely. I mean, you gotta love that. I mean, I think and that's a great point, Danny, is we're speculating on a lot of that in terms of the friction between the two of them. But if you just kind of read between the lines, and especially the way that Aaron Rodgers kind of went after Russell in that game post game,
yep.
I mean, those are things that that don't go unnoticed, you know? And so I love the fact that there is this rivalry. I love the fact that, you know, you look at the history and both players have not beat each other at their home fields. You know, Aaron Rodgers is undefeated versus Russell Wilson at Lambeau. Russell Wilson is undefeated against Aaron Rodgers at CenturyLink Field. And I think that you look at this situation and I just feel like this 2019 Seahawks, they're a team that just kind of defies logic. And they're a team that you talk about going against the odds in history. I would count on this team to overcome that more than any other team.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think it's funny. They're the exact opposite in this regard. Aaron Rodgers has rabbit ears. He hears everything. And in fact, he can hear criticism sometimes that's not even criticism. He is constantly making sort of between the lines, sort of snide reactions to something that was said two time zones away from him. Russell does everything he can not to hear it. And if he does hear it, he proceeds to immediately flush it from his consciousness where he's not responding to or answering perceived slights anywhere. It's very funny. Two great quarterbacks who have entirely different psychological processes of how they get ready for the game.
Well, no question about that. And also just you talk about body language, right? I mean, just on the field. I mean, Danny, not even the slights that are happening outside of it, but just watch the two when they're playing. I mean, Aaron Rodgers has arguably the worst body language of any quarterback in the NFL. It drives me nuts. Bad plays happen, bad play calls that he doesn't like. You can see it all over his face. And he's not afraid of letting the entire country know that he doesn't like one particular receiver because he dropped a ball or he doesn't think he was in the right place. And it goes against all of what you would teach young quarterbacks to do and be. And on the flip side, you got Russell Wilson, who's got the perfect body language, you know, and sometimes, you know, people question him as is he a robot? And it's just very funny to see the two different styles and how they've been able to be successful in this league. But you're running up with Aaron Rodgers and that body language, that kind of snarkiness and tension that's constantly there, it's made it hard for the Green Bay Packers over the last couple of years. They've been able to overcome and be successful at times, but you know, they had a recent head coaching fire because of a strained relationship. And you've always been curious as to how Matt LaFleur was going to be able to handle Aaron Rodgers. And it just feels like it's a constant, you know, push and pull with Aaron Rodgers. And you wonder when the string is going to snap.
You could hear Jake Heaps on Tom, Jake, and Stacey every single day. Noon to 3. Jake, I have one last question for you because I was watching the Packers game against the Minnesota Vikings last night, and I'm specifically just focusing on Za'Darius Smith. He is just something else, a big guy. He reminds me a lot of Clowney where he was with the Texans. He gets moved all over the place. When you go up as a quarterback against a guy like that, what's the best way to keep him on his toes and to keep him from taking you down the entire game?
Yeah, the Clowney comp when he was at Houston is absolutely perfect. He's a stand-up guy. He will be at any place at any time. They can line up on the right, the left, the interior, on the edge. The thing is for the Green Bay Packer defense, Za'Darius Smith, he is their lifeblood. He's the guy that's going to bring the energy, the juice for that team. So if Za'Darius Smith gets going, it gives that defense a lot of confidence. If you can neutralize him, he may get a sack, but if you can neutralize him for the majority of the game, the defense ends up really struggling. And the way that you can contain him is by running the football. And the interesting part about the Green Bay Packers is they have focused their offseason on getting after the passer. They signed Za'Darius Smith, Preston Smith, and they have allowed their defensive linemen to turn their guys loose. And so what ends up happening is they're not worried about run gap responsibilities. They're just worried about going after the passer. And so I think that that's the one way that you can really try and slow those guys down is not try and run it 30 times, but be effective in the run game and wear those guys out a little bit, which will help the rest of the O-line to be able to slow down Za'Darius Smith and those guys. They're extremely talented, and it's definitely going to be a tough task.
He is Jake Heaps. You'll hear him today, noon to 3, on Tom, Jake, and Stacey. Jake, it's awesome to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks for having me, guys. Have a good one.
Very fun to talk to him. We will have the professor back for the morning drive tomorrow. They've been the two best teams in the conference over the past 10 years. Matt LaFleur tried, but we're not letting him talk away out of the friction between these two teams. That's next.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
There is no serious tension between Wilson and Rodgers. Stop writing the storyline, Danny, although the texter from the 425 used a different word than storyline. Rodgers is just an orifice to everyone, is what he said.
Nice edit, Danny.
I don't know that that's wrong. Don't know that I could say that that is wrong. It is Danny and Gallant. Looking up the resumes of these two teams, it's striking how similarly great they've been this past decade. And you don't really get great trophies for being the best team in your conference over the decade when you're clearly not the best team in the league. That's the New England Patriots. But the winner of this game will be able to decisively say we were the best team in the NFC over the previous decade. The Packers have won 102 games. They've made the playoffs 8 of 10 years. They've won 9 playoff games. They've won 1 Super Bowl. They've been to 3 NFC championship games. The Seahawks have won 100 games, so 2 fewer than them. They also have 1 fewer tie. The Packers have 2 ties. 8 playoff appearances in 10 years, just like the Packers. 9 playoff victories in the previous 10 years, just like the Packers. They've also won a Super Bowl. They've been back to a second Super Bowl, so they have 2 Super Bowl appearances, but only 2 conference championships. The winner's going to be the best team in the NFC. It's not a surprise. This is as close as you get to having the Packers have been the second most consistent, quote-unquote, rival for the Seahawks over the past decade. The 49ers are there, and that's had the higher intensity, but it disappeared for about 4 years when the 49ers dipped down into the nether regions of the standings. The Packers have been here. This is a team that's printed at the top, just like the Seahawks.
And just like it's about these two teams potentially being the best one in the NFC from this past decade, it's also about who's the better quarterback from the past decade. And I think Russell Wilson is surging upwards. I think that Aaron Rodgers is trending downwards, but a big-time performance from either of these two is going to go a long way, I think, in terms of how we remember them. I think we remember playoff matchups between the best quarterbacks vividly, and we'll remember this one for a while, and hopefully this one goes a lot better than the last playoff matchup did between these two. Russell Wilson did finish the game great.
Oh, that was great. Oh, I'd love it to go the exact same way.
Four interceptions? Yeah,
that's
no,
fine.
No,
they
no,
win it at the
no,
end
it's not.
That
nope,
was awesome.
No,
oh,
stop,
dude, that was
just
the best
stop.
Game.
Four interceptions. Four interceptions. He threw four. Four. Can't
they
do that.
Won the game in overtime.
Yes, I don't care. Still threw four. I don't want to deal with that along
oh,
the way.
He had a bad game because he threw four interceptions. They
yes,
won the game
that
in overtime
what,
with
the,
one of the great all-time
comebacks. That's the definition of a bad game.
Seen. It was awesome.
No, it wasn't. This is why you like Brett Favre. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. He's going to throw an interception there. He's going to throw an interception here. Woo-hoo. What is this, Oprah? No, we don't give out interceptions left and right. I don't want a four interception game. Don't want it. Nope. No-hoo.
They won that game in tremendous fashion.
Yeah, they did.
If they play a carbon copy of that game, nobody's going to be mad about that. Everybody's going to be ecstatic.
I could be mad along the way.
No, fine. That's every game. At every game, there's usually 2 points of just indeterminate rage online about the Seattle Seahawks. Matt LaFleur, who is new to this series, hired first-year Packers head coach. He tried to say he doesn't see any sort of rivalry here.
You know, no, I think it's been more made up from just hearing it from some people in the media, but I don't get that sense from our guys. We know how important this game is for us, and just like it is for them, and because it's the loser's going home. But again, we're going to approach it like any other game that we have all season long.
Fine. He doesn't get the sense
He's
of it.
So
he should go
boring.
He should go talk to some of the fans in Green Bay who still haven't gotten over Golden Tate's game-winning touchdown catch. Which I love to phrase it that way because that sticks in their craw. They still definitely tend to get mad. They have very antagonistic feelings toward the tight end who was not able to catch the onside kick that kind of opened the door for or created the crack in the door that allowed Seattle to kick the hinges off of it as they came storming back. It was absolutely. There is a rivalry between these two teams. There's no doubt about it. And
exactly. How many teams interdivisionally have rivalries in the NFL? Not many. And this is one of them. This is akin to, and I brought this up before this week, Patriots and Colts from the early 2000s. They were in the AFC South and the AFC East. But when you got two quarterbacks and they go up against each other enough, it becomes a rivalry, period.
And that's the difference is that the Seahawks and Packers haven't met in the playoffs as often as you'd think for two teams that have pretty perpetually been there. They haven't had as many playoffs. They've just met the once this past decade in the playoffs. They've just met the once. So I think it does. It will be a very memorable moment, them getting together here. And if Seattle wins, I think it shifts the balance both for the direction of Russell Wilson's career and for who you regard as the top team in the conference from the past 10 years.
I agree with you. I agree with you on both of those fronts, Russell Wilson versus Aaron Rodgers, the Seahawks versus the Packers. And I understand LaFleur saying that it is different because we're talking about two of the youngest teams in the NFL. How much of a stake did they have in the games of the past? But the reality is everyone else views it differently. It's basically everyone else that isn't a part of it, but still, that means it's a rivalry. It's something that has been taking place over the course of the last 10 years. Just because the characters have changed doesn't mean it's gone. Just like with this version of Seahawks 49ers, it's totally different now, but it's still a rivalry. I mean, there's enough history there that this game means a little bit more, should mean a little bit more, just based off of what has happened in the past.
Should we make a belt? Should we get a trophy? Should we make
discount
them?
Discount double check bout?
Yeah, that would actually be pretty funny.
Can we take it from Aaron? Aaron?
Yeah, all of a sudden you've been defrocked. Like the belt has been seized. It's been repossessed. Maybe Lydia and I were talking. Does anybody have any trophies hanging around? Because it's just the best team in the NFC. It can't be too fancy. I was cleaning out my mom's house a few months ago. I came across a trophy from a 11 and under racquetball tournament that I won. And it wasn't even the top tier Like, it was the B division. So, like, all of the good racquetball players, I didn't play in that division. I was like, why in the world does she have a trophy from when I played racquetball as an 11-year-old in Klamath Falls, Oregon?
I only remember having one trophy as a kid. It was for having played soccer. And I remember when I played soccer, I was playing soccer with the intention of trying to prove to my mom I could play football. So I was basically just, like, tripping people and pushing them around and stuff just because I thought that would convince her. And the other trophy I have is embarrassing. And, I'm it's just going to be make.
Oh yeah, I definitely don't want to know what the embarrassing trophy.
Okay,
is.
Okay, so
is it your fantasy football league?
I wish no.
It better not be relate to a musical.
No, it's not. It's not for being the biggest fan of cats in the United States of America.
It's not.
Hang on. It's I won the media flag football MVP a couple of years ago. No one that was good at football playing this game. It is the most over-the-top fancy trophy that I've ever seen, considering it was a game that was played between a bunch of people that are basically, like, way older than me, and, like, me and this other guy who were actually, like, athletic enough to look competent. It is so – I'll take a picture and send it out later. It is the most over-the-top trophy ever, and yes, you bet your bottom dollar that I have it out in the open, but, yeah.
Can you bring it up?
It's like, that's the worst part is, like, that's my crowning achievement as far as having a trophy.
Can you bring it in tomorrow?
I can figure it in tomorrow. Do you want to put, like, duct tape over it?
Yes. Right.
This is for the rivalry.
King of the NFC.
It's a
king
cool
of
trophy.
The NFC.
It's a really cool trophy. So yeah.
All hail king of the NFC. It'll be like our equivalent of the BMF belt.
All right.
When Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal fought earlier this year, neither one actually had a title, but they're bad dudes, so they made a BMF title. It's Danny and Gallant coming up next. We're meeting people in our neighborhood, and today's turn, it's Quandre Diggs. That's ahead.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Seahawks safety Quandre Diggs has been a really important addition to this defense. We have seen the impact that he has had. The team just feels a lot safer on the back end, and it also feels like they are more confident in the secondary, which is really big. And he's someone that, Danny, yesterday I got to catch up with in the locker room, and I love talking with him. I got to play him in a game of NBA 2K a couple of weeks ago, and we started talking yesterday about the Green Bay Packers and their offense.
What's the one thing as a defender you can't afford to do when you're going up against someone like Aaron Rodgers?
Shut up, man. You just can't afford to go with the big play, you know, and a lot of that, you know, falls on me. So can't give up the big play, and you can't just, you know, let the moment be bigger than what it really is. Still a football game, still 100 yards, still a football, still got to cover, everybody got to catch, still got to tackle. So still a football game at the end of the day.
What sets Devontae Adams apart from other wide receivers that you've gone up against?
I played against Tay a bunch of times, so he's very good with his routes. Him and Keenan Allen probably had the two best releases in the game. So, you know, I have a lot of respect for Tay. We battled. We've had some arguments. We had all types of things. But at the end of the day, you know, we're competitive. We have a lot of respect for each other. And, you know, we'll be competing again this weekend. You know. Well, I was trying to finish that question, but, you know, like I was saying, we have a lot of respect for each other, and it'll be fun to go against him again. You know, I won't see these guys two times a year, so, you know, you try to relish these moments.
What's the last thing you guys argued about?
This was a while back. You know, this is like my first, second year. We both were young guys, and, you know, we were just trying to make our stamp in the league, but, you know, it wasn't nothing serious. It was just more about, you know, us trying to win the game and them trying to win the game, so... you know, like I said, we have a lot of respect for each other, and, you know, during the game, we'll be talking to each other, you know, just enjoying those moments. That's what it's all about.
It was fun to catch up with him, and he is someone...
Hold on, I have some questions.
You have some questions?
The first question is, he tells someone to shut up at the beginning of the interview.
It was a player who was next to him. I wasn't 100% sure who it was, because he conducted this media session while sitting in front of his locker. I thought it was fantastic, though my back might be a little bit out of whack, because I was like leaning over the top of somebody to try to get the microphone towards him.
Okay, so he tells another player to shut up. And then did somebody ask him a question mid-answer? And then he returned to your question?
He did, and then he returned to that guy's question, which was, I thought it was very impressive. He was dual answering. It was fantastic.
That's great.
Yeah.
He imposed order upon the press conference.
Yeah, he did. And you know what? I like that he talked about that trash talk side of him with Devontae Adams. And it's funny because when you talk with him, he's so understated. He's very mellow. But he told me when I was playing him in NBA 2K for Hawks Live Gaming that that's how he and Tyler Lockett actually became best friends, is that they started off not liking each other playing Kansas State versus Texas. They were just chirping at each other nonstop. Then they started working out together, and they found out that they liked each other. And I guess the person who was organizing these workouts, they used to team up to drive him crazy. It was very amusing. It's good to catch up with him. And look, this is a guy that's gone up against the Packers a whole lot. And he's been with the Detroit Lions for such a long period of time.
Should be an asset. It should be a resource for Seattle. He knows the offense, and not just this year's offense, but he knows what Rodgers is capable of.
What's interesting is, though, he downplayed that. He downplayed it entirely. He said it's basically just football. And you know, I've gone up against this guy before, but I think that there's a healthy level of respect for what Rodgers can bring to the table. Hopefully he can bring some tricks of the trade with him into this game. I really liked hearing what he had to say yesterday afternoon as well on Bob David Moore, when he talked about his past in Texas high school, where he played in Angleton, which is actually not far from Houston. He played quarterback, which is something I wasn't even aware of. Here he is talking about that.
Well, a lot of guys don't know, but I'm a former quarterback in high school. So for me, you know, I try to think, if I was an offensive player, where would I go? You know, where would I do, and what would I do in a certain situation? And I've been an offensive player my whole life. So for me, that's kind of how I look at the game. And, you know, if it's zone, receivers are going to sit down. But if it's man coverage, they're usually going to keep going. So that's kind of how I look at it. And, you know, on that play, we had rep that all week, so that goes to great coaching. That goes from great film study with my guys. And, you know, it was just something that happened before. We saw it. We took advantage of it, and I was able to go make a play.
I had an article about it in 710sports.com a couple of weeks ago. I really feel like this guy, a great athlete, played nickel corner, he played safety, he played quarterback. I feel like he could be the difference with the Seahawks potentially winning a Super Bowl, because he is that kind of guy that can be, I think, very Bob Sanders-esque. Up next, we got Brock Huard for Blue 42. Can the Seahawks win if Aaron Rodgers has a big game? We will get to that question next. Don't go anywhere.